big welcome to our audience today at Leo's Spaghetti Bar for the return grudge match in the epic struggle between the brothers-in-law who've come back to take on the comprehensive winners of round one, the sisters in crime, as we do sub... Oh, I buggered it up. Can we do it again? I was doing so well too, wasn't I? Once more.
Scoring system.
Yeah, because he's taking a sling from them.
Okay, let's try it. And a big welcome to our audience today at Leo's Spaghetti Bar for the return grudge match in the epic struggle between the brothers-in-law who've come back to take on the comprehensive winners of round one, Sisters in Crime, as we do battle once more on the subject of... crime fiction. Boris Connolly is our man at the piano. Welcome, Boris.
Hello, Michael.
And welcome, studio audience. Let's meet the combatants.
I shall introduce the ladies first. The Sisters in Crime team are Sue Turnbull, academic and crime reviewer, and Lindy Cameron, creator of the local lesbian private eye, Kit O'Malley. And they take on the brothers-in-law, who were the winners? No, they were the losers of round one. Shane Maloney's alter ego. Yes, I will say it again. They take on the brothers-in-law, who were the losers of round one. Shane Maloney's alter ego, and perhaps even better half, is the put-upon Murray Whelan, and he is teamed with crime aficionado, the aspiring author, Andres Cable.
Excellent, excellent. Let's hear those buzzers. Sisters, let's hear your buzzer. Ooh. Dead eye shot. And chaps? The old heartbeat is back. All right. The rules are simple. You get 1 point for a correct answer. You lose a point for an incorrect answer. Stop playing with your heart, Shane Maloney, and pay attention.
You didn't know you had one, did you?
What's that funny beating noise?
Let's start at the very beginning. Who wrote the best-selling crime novel of the 19th century? Sue.
It was Fergus Hume, and it was The Mystery of the Hansom Cab.
Oh, get a point. Yes, it wasn't Conan Doyle. It was Fergus Hume, The Mystery of the Hansom Cab novel set in Melbourne in 1886... to which, Shane Maloney, you wrote an introduction of a recent edition. I try to help you, I make it easy for you, you just sit there.
Not quite. Not quite, no. Nor the original. No, I wrote an introduction for a novel which came out several months later to capitalise on the... success of The Mystery of the Hansom Cab, called The Murder of Madeleine Brown.
Now, that's true, and I apologise to you. You did, in fact, though, supply the quote on the back of The Mystery of the Hansom Cab. It says something like, this is a breathtakingly splendid novel, and your quote was so fantastic they gave you the gig of writing the introduction to their next effort. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes. That's right. My initial response to The Hansom Cab was... I call the yellow cab. Why have you sent me this thing with the horse?
But but the Madeleine Brown book was fantastic. It's got one of the most amazing murder scenes in the opening that I've read for a long time.
It's a wonderfully lurid opening scene that you wouldn't get away with in a contemporary novel.
No.
Wonderful gaslit Victorian interior, ornate ladies' boudoir with rustling silk.
And blood dripping
all over the floor
from an arm
dripping
onto
blood
the floor.
Oh, she's on the bed. Is she tied to the bed?
I have. Is there a little projection
going on?
No.
We could just move on here. There's
something icky about. I'm sorry, yes, I raised that.
It's wonderfully icky.
This is the Radio National quiz, and your quizmaster is caught on the wrong foot. In a watershed moment, which many claim initiated the classic detective story, who introduced the concept of ratiocination, and what is it, Sue?
Well, I think ratiocination is associated with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Well, it may be associated with him, but that's not the right answer, so you lose a point. Shane Maloney.
Ratiocination is the Irish criminal hero. Or possibly villain. A series of novels whose name escapes me. Sorry, next.
Marvellous. Get a point, yes. Lovely answer.
He doesn't know the answer. I'm going to go then Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe was right. Get a point, yes.
Okay.
Yes, Edgar
Allan Poe. Is that the one where the orangutan did it?
In his stories about the detective Dupin, or is it Dupin? Do we know?
How's it spelled?
D-U-P-I-N. Dupin?
Dupin.
In his stories about the detective Dupin, the purloined letter and the murders in the Rue Morgue, Poe sets out the rules of fair play in the classic problem-solving detective story, which he maintained had to be built around cold, logical analysis of the clues, and he called this process ratiocination. All right, if Edgar Allan Poe is the father of the genre, sisters, who would you vote for as the mother of the genre? Just by way of conversation.
Well, there is an Australian writer whose pen name was Waif Wonder. That Lucy Sussex, who's an academic at Melbourne University, did a wonderful book about. But then there are also some American and British writers, including, I think the one that is most spotted for the Americans is Anna Catherine Green, and the Leavenworth case is regarded. And Seeley Register. There are a whole number of names in that early 19th century. But I think Waif Wonder, the Australian, possibly published one of the very, very first crime stories.
Lindy, have you got a woman writer you look to as a kind of founder figure?
For contemporary fiction, I would say probably Sarah Paretsky. For the more recent genre, Mary Fortune, who was that?
Yeah, that was another of those early Victorian writers. Yes,
she was solving crimes on the goldfield.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, Agatha Christie's cactus these days, isn't she? Yeah.
Well, she was a little late getting there, really.
Of course, there's Dorothy L. Sayers.
Those strange baths, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is the Radio National Quiz, and our subject is crime fiction. I was hoping you'd do a little thing. This is the Radio National Quiz, and our subject is... Ooh, crime fiction. In 1946, the newly formed Mystery Writers of America awarded its first Edgar Awards in honour of Poe. In 1954... Sue.
No, I was going to tell you who won the first one.
Peak
too
soon.
Well, I
did. Yes, peak too soon, says a member of the audience. Quite right, and for that indiscretion, you lose a point.
Well, the reason why it was important that who won the first one, because she was an Australian, it was Charlotte Jay, and it was for Beat Not the Bones. So can I have a point for that?
Yeah. Yes!
I think you're outnumbered.
The question was, in 1954... Pay attention, audience. In 1954, its first Best Novel Award was won by an Australian woman. Who was she and what was the novel? And the answer is Charlotte Jay, Beat Not the Bones. Get a point. All right, winding the clock forward 40 years. In 1993, an Australian crime writer became the first non-American to win a Private Eye... Yes, Lindy?
Morell Day.
Morell Day, yes. For...
Harry Lavender.
No.
The Secret... No.
No. The Maria Delgado.
The Last Tango of Maria Delgado.
Dolores Tango.
Oh, no one gets a point. You were so close. But you get the point for Morell Day. That's right. She won a Private Eye Writers of America Seamus Award. She won the prize for the best PI paperback original. And yes, she was Morell Day. 1 point for that. All right. On the quiz, Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap is the longest running play ever,
From which famous play did Agatha Christie... Sue?
It was The Hamlet. It was The Hamlet by the Shakespeare. Yes. And it was the play within the play. It was called The Mousetrap.
Yes, what do you call the play? It is called The Mousetrap, Hamlet yeah. says. That's right. Get a point. On the Radio National Quiz, it's time for a score check. Boris.
Yes, Sisters in Crime on 3 and Brothers in Law on 1.
The booze, the booze.
I'm not
We've
sure
lost
who that means they're supporting
won.
Boris. It's time now for your It's time, Boris, now for your musical round.
Yes, I'm going to play a little medley of tunes. Well, not really a medley, I've sort of just put them together because they don't really go together that well. But here we go. You have to tell me what they are afterwards. Wait for it.
Diddly-dee. That's the one.
Everybody now. Okay, that's enough. Let's hear it. Oh yes, there's a heartbeat. Shame.
This is the Peter Gunn theme.
Yes.
This is Mission Impossible.
That's right.
And the Pink Panther.
Absolutely. Far too easy. We'll have to make them harder next time. Now that was a point, wasn't it? Quickly, I was.
Isn't it three?
I had my. It was a third each in that case. Question six. I've already done question six. Question seven. And now here's a question on another crime classic. Who am I? Starting on the radio at the end of the 1940s, I shifted to television for my first series in the 1950s. I was resurrected as a second TV series in the 1960s, gaining a third lease on life in the 1990s as yet another TV series and a feature film. I am a frequently parodied detective drama and my theme is...
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Oh, I hope it's Dragnet.
It is, but who is it?
Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, it's just the facts.
It's can I help Sergeant Joe Friday? Is his name Joe Friday?
Yeah.
Because the question was the name? Yes?
Did we get the answer?
I think
yes,
we did.
Yes, good. Dragnet.
Dragnet.
Yes. Yes, and was that... Was that version the Stan Freberg version we were hearing? The parody? No. Because my favourite revision of Dragnet is Stan Freberg, whose radio comedy was just so brilliant. And he did those wonderful versions of it.
This is the Radio National Quiz. The topic is crime fiction. The sisters in crime are Sue Turnbull and Lindy Cameron. The brothers-in-law are Shane Maloney and Andres Cable. All right, fingers on your buzzers. And listen carefully. In this round, you buzz when you hear an error. You get a point for correct information. You lose a point if there is no mistake. Clear? Here we go. Sherlock Holmes lived in London on Montague Street. Shane Maloney.
On Baker Street.
No, he lived in Montague Street first and then he moved to Baker Street. Lose a point.
he always was shifty.
Despite themselves, the audience has just given Shane Maloney 5 points for a spontaneous outburst of applause.
You were warned, I did tell you.
Yes, he lived in Montague Street before he moved to his famous Baker Street rooms, which were reached by a flight of 39 steps. Sue.
That must be false.
Yes, but you don't get a point for knowing it's false. You have to know...
John Buchan wrote the 39
steps. It was John Buchan's place.
Do yes. I know, need to know how many steps there were?
Get a point for John Buchan, because that's right. John Buchan wrote the 39 steps. One point. How many steps were there to the Baker Street rooms? Does anyone in the audience know? There were 17. Ooh. Sherlock Holmes is known to have enjoyed cocaine, a drug which particularly features in the story... The sign. Sue.
The sign of four?
Well, I haven't made a mistake yet, but I was about to say the sign of the five, so you do get a point for anticipating my mistake. It also...
That was followed up by the famous five toot crack, wasn't it?
Oh, the 7% solution was the next one. Yeah.
Indeed, and the film The 7% Solution is a film in which Watson arranges for Holmes to be treated by Sigmund Freud. Sue.
I'll take a punt here. That doesn't sound right.
Oh, that is true. Lose a point. 1976 film called The 7% Solution. Watson arranges for Holmes to be treated by Sigmund Freud. And my Halliwells calls it a botched all-star extravaganza. But we tend to think of Holmes as a tobacco man, famous for saying to Watson, it's a five-pipe problem. They don't move. It was a three-pipe problem, actually. And I beg you not to speak to me for the rest of the day. Well, in fact, it was the next 50 minutes. That utterance occurs in The Red-Headed Match. Sue.
The Red-Headed League.
Yes, get a point.
Okay.
Smoke was also to play a part in his occupation after he hung up his magnifying glass because, as you will recall, Sherlock Holmes retired to a life of beekeeping. Sue.
Yes, and that was written about by Laurie King, the American writer who then took Sherlock Holmes and had him marry her character.
Terribly interesting, but what's the mistake?
Ah, you were going to say...
No, I wasn't. Lose a point. There was no mistake.
There is justice.
This is the Radio National Quiz. Still on Sherlock Holmes. What happened at Reichenbach Falls?
He was pushed off.
Yes, Shane Maloney, what happened?
He was pushed off by Professor Moriarty.
Yes, that's right.
He was.
And why did that happen?
Because Conan Doyle wanted to kill him. Conan Doyle had enough of his character and he wanted to get rid of him.
That's so right, get a point each, that's right.
But he didn't want to kill him as much as Professor Moriarty did. Because Holmes had, on many occasions, relentlessly prevented Professor Moriarty from dominating the world, which I think is a much superior motive for pushing someone off the Rickenback Falls than being bored with your character.
I absolutely agree with you. Shane Maloney, finger on your buzzer. What popular Radio National program also features a character... named Moriarty. Sue.
It's got to be The Goons.
The Goons is right, yes, good point. As we've already seen, there have been many, many screen versions of Sherlock Holmes, but few are as animated as Charles M. Jones's film Deduce, You Say. Who played Holmes and Watson as they solved the mystery of the Shropshire Slasher in Deduce, You Say? Sue.
I'm going to have to go. Would it have been Bugs and Daffy? And would Bugs would have been Holmes and Daffy would have been Watson?
You are so close. I'm going to give you half a point. It's actually Daffy Duck and Porky Pig.
I was trying to think of Bugs Bunny because Bugs was always the suave character. So I was imagining him as a sort of of Holmesian figure. But then Daffy wasn't quite right for Watson, so I knew in my own mind that I'd miscast it.
I thought this was just a bit of name dropping, you know, first name terms with them. Daffy and Bugs, and I was trying to figure out who you meant. And
Mr. Bunny to you, Shane.
Actually, Chuck Jones himself made a wonderful comment once that he said that when he went to sleep, he dreamed he was Bugs Bunny, but when he woke up, he was Daffy Duck.
On Radio National, this is The Quiz, and our topic is crime. Who said, if my books had been any worse, I should not have been invited to Hollywood, and if they had been any better, I should not have come? Lindy.
Oscar Wilde. No.
No, not Oscar Wilde. No,
I know he doesn't even write crime.
Sue.
I'll go William Faulkner.
William Faulkner is wrong. No. Lose a point.
Okay. They're getting some help here. Mm.
He also said it was a blonde. A blonde to make a bishop kick a hole in a stained glass window. Andres.
I think it was Chandler.
It was Raymond Chandler, yes, get the point.
Yeah, William. Like Patrick White to me.
Yes, I was put off by the actual diction. I should. It doesn't sound very Chandlerian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you criticising the quizmaster? I dare you to criticise the quizmaster. Andres, why do you read crime fiction? And why do you write it? Is it because you're interested in some aspect of the human condition, or is it a form of entertainment, an escape from humanity, if you like?
Well, crime fiction is a form of entertainment. Everyone knows the best crime books are read overnight. But I write it for some strange and undefined reason. I'm a pacifist, but fascinated by murder and the darker side of people. And I bet the entire audience is here.
When you say it like that, you are speaking as though you are interested in human psychology at some level, and crime fiction helps you get at that.
I'm interested more in philosophy. And I guess human psychology is part of it. Who knows why we're interested in crime fiction? Who knows why we're drawn to shootings in missing bodies in Glen Iris? Why crowds gather outside? But we are.
What about you, Lindy? Does it relate to shootings in Glen Iris, or is it a form of entertainment that's actually not related to real world events at all?
No, it's not related to real life. Real life is icky and sticky and horrible, and quite often you don't find out who killed someone in Glen Iris, but in a crime novel you always find out who did it, and they always get caught, and justice is nearly always done. It's like it's a puzzle that your last piece gets put in when you close the book, when you finish it. I think that's what the attraction is.
So it's gymnastics for the mind at some level.
Yeah, but it's also the outside world. You can have children killing their parents for their money, like the so-called society murders. You can have someone being shot in Glen Iris. You can have, you know, road rage lunatics accidentally killing themselves because they've got a knife in their hand when they're pursuing someone. All of that sort of stuff. And it's so ridiculous and so stupid. And yet you can open a crime novel and you know that the main person, the protagonist in the novel, male or female, will solve the crime in the end.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to the sisters. Which phobia affects Lindy Cameron's sleuth, Kit O'Malley? Lindy.
I'm glad I know that one. A fear of heights.
Yes, a fear of heights. She has vertigo, although it doesn't stop her making love on the balcony of a high-rise building to a very gorgeous girl.
I think she kept her eyes shut.
Life, of course, often imitates art. Whose real-life involvement with a married female FBI agent resulted in a marital shootout? Shane Maloney.
Oh, this happened to Sue Grafton, didn't it?
No.
It didn't happen to Sue Grafton, no. Sue.
It was Patricia D. Cornwall.
It was Patricia Cornwall. Yes. Get the point.
Ah, it's yes. All the same to me.
And which...
We all look the same, do we, Shane?
FBI agents, I mean.
Which well-known American evangelist family raised Patricia Cornwall? Sue.
Oh, it's Billy Graham. Yes, it was because she wrote the life story of Billy Graham's wife.
Whose name was?
Mrs. Graham.
Yes, get the point.
That's 5 points for spontaneous applause, Michael. I think so.
Oh, all right.
Well, my guess was going to be the Manson family.
I think Shane Mullaney just got spontaneous applause as well. I'm going to give him 5 points.
Laughter, that's 1 point.
Oh, I'm not going to haggle with the audience, it's believe me. While we're on things American, who is Bill Clinton's favourite crime novelist? Andres.
And I put my foot in it.
Walter Mosley.
Oh, he got it.
Walter Mosley, yes, get the point, yes.
He got it.
Shane Mullaney said Walter Mosley. 1 point to the chaps. Black American crime writers are almost as rare as Black Academy Award winners. One of the greatest is Chester Hines, who was driven into exile in the 1950s. His books about the Harlem detectives Coffin Ed and Gravedigger Jones were first published in what language? Sue.
I'll go French.
I'll go French is right, yes.
Good one. The French have always had an extremely interesting taste in the noir and the thriller, and they've often been ahead and they've been in love with American crime for some time.
And what do you put that down to?
I don't know. Maybe the Second World War.
But they like Jerry Lewis too, so I wouldn't read too much into it.
I was going to engage you in some deep conversation about Breathless.
Ah, yes.
Abu Dassouf.
Abu Dassouf. Got
up. But Shane Mullaney destroyed the moment. There's a long tradition of crime novels being translated to the big screen. Patricia Highsmith's first novel, published in 1949, became one of Alfred Hitchcock's classics. Yes.
May have shot myself in the foot again, because you may not need the answer to this one. Strangers on a Train.
Strangers on a Train is the answer to the question, what's the name of the film and the book? Yes, get a point. All right, still in the old US of A, Tony Hillerman was made a friend of Dine. Yes, Shane Mullaney.
The Navajo.
By the Navajo for his series featuring the cops Joe Leaphorn and Jim Chee. So you lose a point because that wasn't the question.
What's the question?
Until he retired, he was only a part-time crime writer. What was his day job?
He was an Indian scout. He worked for the US Cavalry, leading war parties of Arapaho across the Rocky Mountains and into Monument Valley in pursuit of renegade Comancheros. But it didn't pay, so he took up crime writing.
I wonder whether that counts as two outbursts of spontaneous applause. 5 points for Shane Mullaney. This audience hates itself. They keep giving Shane those bonus points, and then the Sisters in Crime fan club just regret it so, so deeply. And we're getting near the end of the game, so those bonus points may be very, very important. The final question. Each of Carl Heisen's comic crime novels set in Florida has a different cast of characters, but there is one reclusive character who pops up in most of them, Sue.
He is the ex-governor of Florida who eats roadkill, whose name is...
Jeb Bush.
I knew it. I knew it. I'm having a menopausal moment and the name has dropped out. Oh, what is he called? He's called Skip.
Skink.
Skink.
You get a point, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Boris, we've had so much fun. Do you think it matters who's won?
Not at all. But I'll tell you anyway.
Okay.
Sisters in Crime on 16.5 points, followed closely by Brothers in Law on 13 points.
Oh, lovely.
But not close enough, obviously.
And that's all for today. Would you please thank our guests, Sue Turnbull, Lindy Cameron, Shane Mullaney, and Andres Cable. Our scorekeeper and musical hitman is Boris Connolly. The quiz today was written by Carmel Shute, along with our producer, Suzanne Donisthorpe. Technical stuff by Richard Girvan. And our hosts for the quiz have been the Sisters in Crime, and you can find them on the internet by going to the quiz on the Radio National website, where there is a hot link. Do stay with me now. There's lots to look forward to as our afternoon continues here on Radio National. Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming. It's been such fun, and I'm sorry for my croaky voice. Carmel, is there anything else you wanted to say, or are we...
No, thank you very much for coming. Just tell you one thing. Do you reckon you could put
an answer
to who, about Tony
Hillman?
Perhaps, or
what
he actually did.
What he did.
Explain
what he did.
All right. Okay. Okay, just let me say it, and we'll see if we can edit that in. Okay, I'll just if you shush, don't listen, find out. Just let me say it, then we can edit in. In fact, the answer is that Tony Hillerman was a professor of English at the University of New Mexico. Oh, you hams. Thank you so much. That's been such fun. Thank you. Oh, that fixed it.